about.
Well, good morning, Las Vegas. How's everybody doing? I'm Edie, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm scared to death. Held, I got my ego in check. I have on my controlled panties because my backside plan, not my ass, goes into convulsions, and I know how. I don't really need this. It's going to be spiritual because when that stops, God's kicked in. It hasn't stopped yet. I want to thank you, Mama Fran. She's become my mama. I've been talking to her on the phone for almost about a year, 8 years, 8 months or something. She's gone through my divorce with me. She just keeps saying, Edie, it's going to be okay. Don't drink. And make sure you bring something nice to talk about. You can't hear me? Okay, now can you hear me? Okay, good, good, good. Okay, I'm going to breathe. Thank all of the wonderful speakers. I'm going to tell you that I woke up at about 3 o'clock this morning and decided that I was not the one for the job. Alone in my room. We've had David, the smuggler. We've had Margaret, the miracle worker. You need Hawaii. I mean to Hollywood. We have the gentle giant, Bob. And for all of you that don't realize it, there was a mistake in the program. The spiritual speaker was yesterday at 2:30, and that was Donna. And, of course, we had Don, great Don. Don, where are you at, Don? Are you here? It's probably gone already. Oh, there you are, Don. Good morning. And then we have Judge John. Then we have this wonderful committee. I was up early. I think there's about 60 people, if you count all the committees and the co-chairs. And so I just want to thank Rhonda and Sarah. Did you get the note? Yeah, I wanted to stay over, and I called the hotel, and they said, well, you got to get a note from Sarah. I said, oh, okay. So I got a note from Sarah. Now, I have another interesting thing I want to talk to you about. I was getting dressed this morning, and, you know, I have a nice little suit on here. And, you know, I don't need pantyhose because I hate them. So I have those little knee-highs, right? Well, I've got some knee-highs on that I want to show you. They actually aren't knee-highs. They go all the way up here, right? But this one on the left side doesn't work, so it's hanging down, and I'm in the elevator. I'm in the elevator, and I'm tripping because it's this rubber thing's around my foot. And I said, for God's sake, I'm a spiritual speaker. She can't even get her knee highs right. I want to welcome the new people. And I want to thank everybody that's put this committee, put this thing together. Let's give them a hand. And now, for the new people, I want to read to you. And the reason I want to read to you is because when I got here, I thought I couldn't read. Because we get told, you got to get your Kleenex out. I think we get told a lot of things that just aren't true. Don't we? People share with us. And sometimes in their sharing, we make it our own belief, and, you know, it's just not true. So I was reading this morning, and I ran across this page. I said, oh, I love that page. I think I'll read some of that. Because it reminds me of what's going on here, and I knew there'd be, I've never seen, we had quite the Cadillac problem, didn't we, at the countdown? That wasn't a Volkswagen problem. We had so many years. The problems we could develop in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was wonderful to have that many years of recovery here, and I'm shaking all over. But here we go. So I went to Akron and also to Cleveland. I met more recovered alcoholics. I saw these people, a quality of peace I saw in these people a quality of peace and serenity that I knew that I must have for myself. Not only were they at peace with themselves, but they were getting a kick out of life. We're getting a kick out of life this weekend, aren't we? Yeah. I lost my place and my chairs are so I can't even see the pages here. I saw these people a quality of peace and serenity that I must have. Not only were they at peace with themselves, they were getting a kick out of life, such as seldom encountered except in the very young. They seemed to have all the ingredients for successful living. Philosophy, faith, and a sense of humor. They could laugh at themselves. They had clear-cut objectives. Appreciation, and most especially, an appreciation and sympathetic understanding for their fellow man. Nothing in their lives took precedence over their response to the call of help from an alcoholic in need. They would travel miles and stay up all night with someone they'd never laid eyes on. Already. And before, they'd stay up all night, travel miles with somebody they never laid eyes on. And before, and think nothing of it, never laid eyes on, think nothing of it. Jesus, just bear with me. Far from accepting praise for their deeds, they claimed the performance a privilege. Yeah, they claimed it a privilege. And insisted that they invariably received more than they give. Extraordinary people. And that, if you're new, is who you're surrounded by today. Look around your table. You're surrounded by extraordinary people. Yes, you are. Yes. I'm not done. This is it, and I know this one pretty good. Even though my tears, I got this thing. I wore makeup. I shouldn't have. The last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I've had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments because that is life. But also, I have known a great deal of joy and a peace that is handmaiden of an inner freedom. This is my very favorite phrase. I have a wealth of friends, and with my AA friends, an unusual quality of fellowship. For to these people, I am truly related, first through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objective and newfound faith and hope. And in the years go by working together, sharing our experience with one another, and also sharing our mutual trust, understanding, and love, and without strings and without obligations, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There's no more aloneness with that awful lake so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach. The ache is gone and never need return. Now there's a sense of belonging, of being wanted, needed, and loved, and in return for the bottle and the hangover, we've been given the keys to the kingdom. I just love that page. I'm done reading now. If you're new, I welcome you here. And I want you to know that I could be a poster child for Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I can get sober and stay sober, so can you, honey. I come from a long line of real, real alcoholics. They aren't the kind of alcoholics that pour the alcohol into glass with ice and refer to it as a cocktail. No. They pull it out from underneath the seat. They cranked off the lid, and they kicked it back, and they took a big drink, and then they went, ah! I thought it was a Mexican thing. I found out later it was a whiskey thing. We were talking at breakfast a little bit about our heritage. My mother's American Indian and Mexican. Her name was Henrietta Valdez. She rode Harleys before women rode Harleys. I was born in 1955, and the family used to get real upset with her because she had me in a leather papoose strapped to her back. Eventually, they got married. She married a man by the name of Jim Cartwright. He's a Viking from Drumline, Oklahoma. He recently found out that our name is not Cartwright, it's McClure. He's married to his fifth wife that's doing the genealogy thing, and he says, you know, I think I'm a bastard. I said, really? Love my daddy. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous, he's in my life today. You know, I'm always, always, always grateful. And you know, they don't say it much anymore, but they used to say, you know, somebody had to die for you to have your seat. Yeah. I've had a lot of people in my life die from this disease. And one of them was my mother. My mother was a wild woman. Very independent. Everybody thought she was really, really strong. Henrietta Valdez. She was the best horsewoman in San Bernardino County. That's in California. You don't need to know where it's at. So I started to have feelings. I want to tell you about locations. Longitudinally and latitudinally, that was over here. It's about 40 miles south of San Jose. And because, see, I don't want to be, you know what I asked God to do this morning is just allow me to be authentically real with you this morning. Because, you know, you've had the best speakers that I have ever heard. And about 3:30 this morning when I was in the tub, I thought, my God, I wonder if I could just get an early flight. But you know what? I'm whole, perfect, and complete just the way I am. My sponsor is sitting right here. She was the one with 47 years, right? Yes, her name is Louise. And she says to me, you know, we talk on the phone and sometimes she doesn't get me. You know what she says at the end? I'll be loving your baby. I'll be loving your baby. And I'm going to tell you, when I got here, I needed to be loved. I was so broken and so wounded. I wasn't angry. I was full of hate. I had to graduate to anger. Yeah, I had to graduate to anger. You know, I was telling you about my mother, wasn't I? Yeah, well, I'm not a circuit speaker. So we're going to be all over the place today. I'm not quite sure where we're going, but it'll be real. Connie and I were talking before the meeting, and Connie and I are kind of going through some challenging life times. We're reinventing ourselves, aren't we, Connie? God's working on us. First time I've talked since God's been so busy. But it's going to be wonderful if I could just push it. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, the woman that's standing before you right now is not the woman that walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to you in Wrangler jeans, flannel shirts, cowboy boots, 2 6 packs of beer, and forget you, Fran. Bought all my clothes in the feed store. You betcha. There's no need to go into Macy's or anything. Funny looking people in there. You know, my first sponsor, you know what, I need to drink first. Because I was a drunk. My God, was I a drunk. But what I got I got it from my mother, Henrietta. Henrietta was a big old alky. But she was the one that had a lot of fun, you know. She was the life of the party. Nobody even knew the day that she walked down the hall and she sat on the edge of the bed. And she took that gun and put it to her heart and she shot and killed herself. Nobody even knew she was having a bad day. And I was almost 4 years old and I was the one that found her. So do you think that I got here with a couple of issues? You betcha. I learned how to survive. And I learned how to take care of myself. And you know, the big lesson for me in this year of recovery, you know, my sponsor here, Louise, is here with Vicki. Vicki won a whole bunch of money over at the Rio. Whole bunch of money? And I'm staying over because Sarah wrote the note. So I can stay. And Vicki said, you know what, Edie, I'd like to give you some money to pay for those extra days. And I said, oh, no, I can't do that. And Louise says, why don't you just let somebody give to you? Why don't you just say, well, thank you, Vicki. You restore my faith in human beings. So Vicki handed me $200, and I said, well, thank you, Vicki. You restore my faith in human beings. And that may not sound like much, but from where I came from and in my background, you know, I learned how to not tell you what was really going on and take care of myself. For me to say to you, you know, I'm not just really having a very good 6 months. But you know what? I'm going to 2 and 3 meetings a day. I've got a truck full of newcomers. I got 2 newcomers taking care of my house. Yeah. Somebody in the program says, well, aren't you afraid they're going to steal from you? I said, I've got nothing left. I lost it all in the divorce. And it's just stuff anyhow. It's just stuff anyhow. And, you know, they're calling me and they're talking to me and they're saying, well, how's it going, Edie? I said, oh, my God, you wouldn't believe this conference. I mean, it's like a mini international. I mean, how many people are from outside the United States that are here today? And I, you know, keep giving the report. And I said, I've never been to anything quite like this. It's wonderful. I'm having a great time. Tonight, my friend Gay Lee is coming into town. She just recently moved here, and she had 20 years. And I talked to her this morning at 6 o'clock, and she called me just as I was up in the room, and she said, Edie, you know, after you speak, they're probably going to start giving you a lot of attention and ask you to go to a meeting and all that. But what I want you to do is I want you to give me my chip tonight. Can you find out where there's a meeting in Las Vegas and can give you my chip? So, out there, we got some homework to do. We're going to give Gay Lee her chip tonight. Anyhow, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, I had after my mother died, my father gave us to my cousin, my Aunt Edith. My name's Edith. I'm named after my Aunt Edith, and her daughter had lost her children because she's an unfit mother, so my father thought it'd be appropriate that he'd give us to her. Because he was mad at the Valdez, appropriate alcoholic thing to do. And basically what she did is she took my hand and she took my little brother's hand and she took us to the places that women alcoholics go. She took us to places that we shouldn't have gone. We've seen things we shouldn't have seen and we had things done to us that shouldn't have been done to us. But if you grew up with a woman alcoholic or a man alcoholic or we all grew up with probably alcoholics, not really all of us, but some of us. It, I grew up with those kind of alcoholics who liked to, Mary was a bar drinker who would go to those sleazy little bars. We'd be in the car. After about 6 hours, she'd come out with a bottle of pop and peanuts. That's called dinner. And then they'd have you lay down in the car. Any of you done that? You know, you have those bar drinking parents? And I don't know why this night was any different, but I think you learn to mimic the people you grow up with. And underneath that seat was a bottle of Seagram 7. I was in an old beat-up Ford and at the 19th hole in Tustinas, California. And I knew the 19th hole. My Aunt Edith was in there with her daughter Mary, and my little brother Joaquin and I were out in the car, and I was hungry. And I reached underneath that seat and got that bottle of Seagram 7. It had about this much in it. And I cranked off the lid, and I took a big drink and guzzled it out like that and went, ah! My ears popped. My eyes started to run. And I just hung on to the steering wheel and pretty firm all the way down. And when it got to my belly, it just went, whoa. And the magic happened for me. Turned around and gave my brother. I said, this will help. So that's when he had his first drink, too. And it was on for me. I want you to know that Mary, she fancied herself a prostitute, a night call girl. She was really just an old stupid whore. You know, when she should have charged, she didn't. And when she shouldn't have charged, she did. So she went to jail a lot. Yeah, we got put in holding homes. I love getting put in holding homes because they had sheets. Yeah, we lived in an old Rambler for 6 years, a Rambler station wagon. I just thought everybody lived in Ramblers. You know, you don't know what you don't know what you don't know. If that's the environment you're in, you know. We lived in low-income housing in San Francisco out in the Fillmore, and it's sort of like you, it's like a jungle. And you know the people that live there, and you know the people who don't live there. And, you know, I had this bad habit when I was a kid. I used to scrape up gum off the ground and chew it. Because they probably told me not to. And there was this big old gum of Bozo bubble gum. I had a nickel. It had a lot of chew left in it. And I was over there working on that. And this woman come across the courtyard. And she had on red shoes, and I could hear her pantyhose. And she must be a parole officer or somebody with the government. And she looked down at me and she said, "Well, little girl, why don't you take that nickel and go buy yourself some gum?" I looked up at her and I said, "Because I want to chew this gum, that's why." Did the same thing with the steps when they recommended them. There was a woman, an African-American woman, who took care of us and fed us when we lived there, and her name was Lucy. And I don't know how this lady found Lucy, but she did. Bottom line is, I ended up, packed a little Safeway suitcase, and they gave me to this lady. She was an Avon lady. She wasn't with the authorities. She wasn't able to have her own kids. And I remember driving across the Bay Bridge from San Francisco, kind of having a feeling about that. So, I've had my issues with rejection and abandonment and being given a break. Yeah. So what? It's part of who I am. All the experiences, you know. About 6 months later, Mary found out that she couldn't get child support because my name was actually Roth, because I was adopted by Mr. Frank Roth on the USS Midway, and he found out that I wasn't living with her, so he went and hunted us down, and Mary then went to this place and got us back. And that day her name was Jerry. Her name was Jerry, and her husband, I don't even remember his name. He was a fireman, I know that. I had Flintstone vitamins every day. They ate all the bait. Like, they had food in the refrigerator and they cooked and stuff. They took me to Disneyland and bought me a sailor suit. You know, I mean, these are things I remember, but I do remember the day that Mary came to get me and Jerry was crying. And I remember going up to her and grabbing her face and saying, "You know, whatever you do, don't let her see you cry." See, I learned it. I don't even know why I learned that. But I learned at a really young age. You just don't let them know that you're hurt. And, you know, I was a street kid. I sold Hate Ashbury News. I got it, you need it, you buy it, you read it, only a dime. I was there when Janis Joplin and all those people, when all the crazy, you know, hippies were there, and people from Minnesota were driving through wanting to look, you know, and ask questions and, you know, really smoke marijuana and take LSD. And I said, "Yeah, they do. They really do. They do." And we had all these kids that were running away from Minnesota and North Dakota and all these places, right, and coming for the free love and all of that. And, you know, they were not really prepared for San Francisco. I said, "You know, you better get something. You know, you need to start panhandling Union Square, gathering pop bottles out of Golden Gate Park, or, you know, selling papers or doing something, or you're going to be selling something you don't want to sell." So I was always able to survive, because I'm a survivor, right? Mary, through her alcoholism, and we got a CR doctor here. Emergency surgery. Where was I? Mary. So Mary, in her alcoholism, you know, it just went downhill, and we ended up in Watsonville, California, and she was doing the labor camp. And I know an awful lot about alcoholism. Let me tell you something. I was 10 years old, and I was giving her Carlo Rossi wine and one of those little shrimp cocktail glasses just to get the sick off her in the morning. We lived above a Mexican bar with a mattress and artichoke crates for end tables. And the Mexican bar sign at night would flash. And I want you to know that I was the one that took care of her. And I was just a little girl. I know an awful lot about alcohol. And it's the last thing I wanted to be, The last thing I wanted to be was an alcoholic. I knew a few things. I knew that I didn't want to be, I knew that I did not want to be, your cell phones go off and if you're talking, it's just awful. So you hear the cell phone. What did we do before cell phones? How did we survive? I just don't know how we got by. So where was I? I was in Watsonville, right? And this cell phone went off. And Mary, and Mary was dying of alcoholism. She had the bloated liver. She had the discolor. She had two variant Lady of the Night diseases. And she was dying. And somehow in there she got a hold of my birth father and he came and picked us up. And we left her there at that bar. She was sitting at the bar the last time I ever saw her. I was sitting at the bar and she says, "Baby, it's going to be okay." I want you to know that she died 3 days later. In that hotel room, alone. Her esophagus ruptured and she bled to death. So I know an awful lot about alcoholism. And the last thing I wanted to be was an alcoholic. The last thing I wanted to be was an alcoholic. I was ready to be a dope thing way before I was able to be an alcoholic. It's had a different ring to it. At any rate, I went to work and live with my father, and he took us to San Jose. I got this fancy watch. I can't even see what time it is. I don't even watch I can read. Oh, is this time right here? There's a clock right here. Did you know that? Well, hell, we're good to go then. I need to get sober. It's 11:06. Oh, 11:07. So my dad took me to San Jose, and I was like 13 years old going on 40. A little bit of an attitude, can you imagine? Went to live with my dad and his second wife from Houston, Texas, that hated Mexicans. Yep. Yep. Went to a track home over there off of Story Road in San Jose and looked like the Taj Mahal to me. I said, "Boy, they've been living high in the hog, haven't they?" Got a little bit of a resentment. The first night we had dinner, she put this white bread there on the table. I grabbed me a piece of it and squished it down and made myself a little tortilla. Reached off into the plate of canned green beans and grabbed me up some food. She freaked out. "Well, you're not going to eat like a heathen Mexican in my house." I was not allowed to eat at the dinner table with them. I made sure that in the presence of her, I always ate like a heathen Mexican. "You'll never eat at the top of the mark." I don't know where the hell the top of the mark is, but I'm not eating there. And she was, you know, they were the kind of alcoholics that put their alcohol in glasses over ice. And my dad would put on a smoking jacket and become a Viking. She would beat him up, and it was just like all the other stuff, right? Just, it was just a little more quaffed. And I came home from school one day, and she was flopping around the kitchen like a carp out of water. And I'd seen that before. I knew what it was. She was in alcoholic convulsions. I called the cops. I knew what to do. I got the paramedics. I got the people over there. They hauled her off to San Jose General Hospital. And back then, in 1970, they called that a nervous breakdown. Prompted by my being in the house. Yeah. Yep. Yep. So, for her to get out of the hospital and come home, we did go visit her and she'd made some ashtrays. But for her to come home, I could not be there because I was the one that caused all this. I am a very powerful little girl. So my dad took us to Chowchilla, California. Anybody remember Chowchilla? That's where they stole all those kids in the bus and buried them. Now, Chowchilla, now you need to know that my only goal in life is this. I'm not going to be an alcoholic. I'm not going to be a whore. I'm going to marry somebody in the Mexican mafia. I'm going to have me a lime green 64 Chevy. It's going to be lowered. I'm going to have those dogs in the back. Yeah. I had some goals. I was goal-oriented. You know, one time when I was in one of those holding homes, when Mary was put away in the jail for extended period of time, we get put in holding homes, and we were adopted, but we were kind of like the, what you call a ward of the court for something. I never did quite understand it. But the state of California somewhat owned me. And they, because of the situation in my case, they always wanted to get me off in a little room and ask me questions because they thought I had mental problems because I didn't speak for 2 years after my mom died. I figured out the reason I didn't speak because she never spoke English to me. It was a language barrier. Wasn't crazy. Oh, well. At any rate, I was in this room one day with this man who had a sweaty head. He had a sweaty head. And he was asking me all kinds of personal questions, and by now I'm like about 11 years old, and, you know, I'm not answering the questions. And my favorite words were the words that friend says I can't say it here. So I used them on him, just for an effect. He set my case. Said, you're going to spend your adult life incarcerated in prison because you have the inability to adapt and you're angry. Boy, we got a smart one. I said, well, you look like a child molester to me. So I don't care what you say. You know, I was defiant. You know, and my dad was taking me to Chowchilla, and Chowchilla, it's out in the middle of the Central Valley of California, and they ran out of names, so they start road 20, 21, 22, you know. And I thought, well, he's taking me out here to do me in. But he didn't. We got to where 22 and a half, and we made a left. We went down this pavement end, and we went up this dirt road to this little shack, and the only thing holding the shack up, what are y'all, oh, you're looking at me over there. God. I don't like that. My God. That is not good, Connie. So we're getting out of this house, and I wish I'd never looked over there. I really wish I'd never looked over there. Bob, you look so serious. But I know you're channeling your love. So this big old oddity was what was holding up the house. Right? We went in there, and there's a little girl in there frying chicken. And there's supposed to be like five kids there. And I said, well, where are they? Where is everybody? And she said, well, they've all gone a-fogging. Gone a-fogging? I'm like, what's that? And I said, well, how long does that take? And she goes, well, they're out in Fireball. And they found a place out in Fireball with frog legs that have legs this big. I'm like, okay. She goes, you're so lucky because next weekend we're going to have us an okra and frog leg fry, and I think we're all going to get our fill. And I'm like, what did she just say? It's like, man, get some beef, I'll make some tacos. But I want you to know that God took me to exactly where I needed to be. Because you know what? My dad dropped me off there, and he went home, and Catherine got on the plane, and San Jose, and she flew to Los Angeles, and while she was in Los Angeles, she got off the plane, she went to the woman's bathroom, and she sat down on the toilet, and she shot and killed herself, just like my mama did. So my dad is, you know, he just forgot to come and get us, and I ended up living in Chowchilla, and I ended up being put in foster care, and I went through like five different foster homes, but God put me exactly where I needed to be. You know, out in the middle of Chowchilla, California, where, you know, where they listen to country western music and they're Okies. She asked me, where are you from? I said, I'm just an Okie from California. I sound like I'm from Texas. I don't know where I got that. It's just my profession. I just ended up working with a lot of good old boys that taught me that I got this twang. I'm just, you know, it's just who I am. And so at any rate, I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because my brother got out of the VA hospital and he said, you know, Edie, they won't let me in Alcoholics Anonymous unless a blood member takes you. Well, I thought that was a good rule. So I took him. And, you know, I don't know about any of you, but I make up stuff. I walked into that room and all that stuff was up on the wall and you had your sign-in sheet. I figured it out. The sign-in sheet, you signed, everybody filled it out and you gave the social worker and she gave you coffee. I did that in the first 4 minutes of my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just make up stuff. I don't ask for any questions. I just make up stuff because I don't want you to think I'm stupid. Right? Because, see, when I was in high school in Chowchilla, Mr. Welch took me into his office, you know, to prepare, you know, get those classes so I could go to Harvard. Preparational classes. But he was looking down at my file and he was looking at me and looking down at my file and he said, Jesus, Edie, with that low IQ, I don't know how come we don't have you upstairs with the retards. I said, boy, is it that bad? He says, yeah, you got an IQ of 83. I said, is that really bad? And he says, well, most people with an IQ of 83 have trouble holding spit in their mouth. But you seem to be handy with your hands. And they're having women join the trade these days, so you need to forget about college. And just, you know, go. So when I got out of high school, he told me, you know, if you ever get a C or a D on your report, you need to look up and wink at God. Mr. Walt didn't mean no harm. He had been moved from the agricultural department because a tractor hit him or something, and he was a counselor. So he didn't mean no harm. So I joined the Carpenters Union when I graduated from high school. And great place for me to be. I want you to know, in 1979, I got my journeyman card. In 1980, I got my contractor's license. And I've been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous since 1979. I went to my first meeting with my brother. When that first meeting that I was in, who do you think they called on? Well, see, when I signed in Edith Francis Cartwright. No, I'm not going to be anonymous. They called on Edith Francis Cartwright. I put my arms around my brother and I said, I am a blood member. I am his blood sister. Right? They just nodded. After the meeting, these women gave me their numbers. I got my first resentment. Like, why? They think I'm an alcoholic. Now, I knew in that first meeting there was something there because, see, I was a blackout drinker. I was the kind of drinker, I'm going to tell you why I lived it. I loved to drink in those sleazy little bars that you can smell two blocks away. You know those kinds? The kind with Slim Jims and Slim Jim and pickled pig knuckles. Right? About 11 o'clock, little haggard's on the jukebox. I'm always on the mountain when I fall. You're with your brand new best friend. Fixing to slip into a blackout, sucking on a pickled pig's feet, and there's a bonding that takes place that words can't even get into explain. Right? That's the kind of drunk I was. One of my last drunks, in and out, and in and out. One of my last drunks, and they used to always tell me in those meetings, Edie, you don't have to gather any more yet. You don't have to gather any more yet. And I didn't know what they meant until I came out of a blackout with the ugliest man driving my car I'd ever seen in my life. Oh, my God, it was August, and he had heat pimples on his belly, and it was sitting on his thighs, and, yeah, he had bad tattoos. And, oh, my God, I looked over at him, and I said, oh, my God, he's got to be a yet. Huh? They moved it in the back seat. We've got company. I found out that was his wife, thank God. They informed me we were going to Reno to buy that stuff we don't talk about here in this meeting. And I decided, well, I can say I've changed my mind. But these people don't look like the kind of people you can say I've changed my mind. So I had this wonderful alcoholic thought. How about this? How about you just go and drink as much as you can drink and then go to that place called treatment? So that's what I did. My last drunk, I don't know how long it lasted because I was a blackout drinker. I want you to know that I came to in a house, sleeping on a couch, and nobody was home. Nobody was home. I got up and started exploring. There was coffee in the coffee maker. There was a little bit of coffee. There was trash liners in the trash can. Upper middle class people. God always took care of me. And I thought, well, they must have jobs. And then the top of my Wranglers was the name of a woman by the name of Mary S. And I was hurting. And I dialed that number, and I didn't even know where I was. And she answered it. Thank God she answered it. And I said, Mary, this is Evie. I don't know. Oh, honey, we were just at the catalog group wondering, what are you doing? Where did you go? How are you? I said, I'm not doing good, but I'll go to treatment. Wonderful. Wonderful. Where are you? You know, you call these Alzheimer's and they want to ask you questions. I said, well, you know, Mary, I don't know where I'm at. Where are you going? Well, honey, find some mail. So I started looking around, found the TV guide. I was on Tully Road in Modesto, California, and I gave her the address, and, you know, I don't remember her coming and getting me. I don't remember her coming and getting me. But she came and got me. And she took me to a detox ward at St. General Hospital. And she checked me in. And 3 days later, I woke up in my sponge slipper and my Sad Falls County pajamas in a place called Reality. Still there. Still called Reality, and a lot of us that woke up from Reality are sober today. But I was sitting on a couch with an old guy with three teeth. The kind of couches, you know, that they give you that you fall into and somebody's got to pull you up out of. I looked at him and I said, well, where are we? He said, here in detox. I thought, oh, for Christ's sake, I'm a drug addict. Funny how, you know, when you can't get the drugs, you'll drink. And I said, well, I've got medical insurance. I got Blue Shield medical insurance. Obviously, we can get better facilities. If you knew, that's the grandiosity. But I went in and knocked on the door. They buzzed me in. I had bought, you know, I had on my striped robe with holes in it. Little, the smoke your own holes. Cigarettes, they pop and burn. There's a man in there that saved my life. His name was Hank B. I said, well, you know, there's been a mistake. I work for San Jose Steel. I have a company truck, and I have medical insurance. He said, well, good, we'll use it. Where's your company truck? I said, I don't know where that is. You know, that's what they do. They ask embarrassing questions. They want to get specific. And, you know, I told him my tale of woe. And he looked at me, and he said, you know, you've been with us for 3 days, and you've been really, really sick. He says, my intuition tells me that you're one of those that is, yeah, constitutionally incapable. But he told me I was wounded. And that I probably won't die sober. Because I have such a shield around my heart and the inability to be honest with you. He said to me, honey, why don't you do this? Why don't you go through the 28-day program? When that's all done, we'll give you back the life you had when you walked through the door. I thought, well, it wasn't such a bad idea. I said, okay. And I want you to know that I went into the bathroom. And the women's side, or I didn't know it was wild, what the hell, I don't even know where I was. But I got on my knees, and I closed the shower curtain, and I got down on my knees, and I said, I don't want to die like my mother. God knows I don't want to die like her. God, just help me. Just help me get through the 28 days, and I'll do whatever you ask of me. And no, I went to the 20-day program after 48 years. They said, you know, you've got to go. I don't know about you, but I probably just let me say it. Hot potatoes. You know, and I ended up going to Santa Clara, and I had trouble because I never did the four step, you know. And there's this woman who got up to speak at this convention or this unity down. They took us in one of the little retard buses. And I wanted to drink so bad, I'm telling you, I wanted to drink so bad. And this woman got up there to speak, and she had on this white suit. And I said, oh, here comes one of those beautiful people, an Alcoholics Anonymous, going to tell me their beautiful life. And I'm sick of it. God, did I need a drink. You know, and she got up there, and she thanked the committee, and then she leaned into the microphone, and she said, I don't know about any of you MFers. By God, I pooped up in the back and said, I bet I can do my four-step with her. So I moved to Sacramento so radio could be my sponsor. I stalked her. I found her. And I told her the story, and she said, oh. And I want you to know that she sponsored me. Grady sponsored me until 2000. And she passed away in 2000. And I tried to use some other people, but Louise, it was just easier to be with my grandma. I said, you know, you don't have to fill in all that up. You know, she just knew. And she tells me the truth. You know, I was newly sober, I don't know, maybe 6 months, and we used to, in those days, we used to hang out in coffee shops all the time, you know, after the meeting until 2 o'clock in the morning telling each other lies. And I had this $150 a month apartment in Sacramento, and I slept with a galvanized pipe right when I got home because I was so afraid. I don't know about anybody that's new, but get a little afraid, don't we? And Louise, they owned the cleaners, the Swanson's cleaners, right? And she looked at me and she goes, honey, are you sick? I said, why? And she goes, you just look awful. I said, well, I don't sleep well. And I said, you know, at night I go home and I sleep with that galvanized pipe and I can hear my heart beat against that pipe. And she pulled me over and she got me on her lap and she said, well, darling, don't you know that God got you sober because he's got big plans for you? You don't have to worry about anybody coming in that apartment and beating, raping, and mutilating you. I threw the pipe away and started freaking with the damn doors open. Because God's got big plans for me. And if you're new, he's got big plans for you, too. I was like 3 years sober, and they said, you need to get a job. I was self-employed. I was really unemployable hanging out at noon meetings with a lot of potential. So I applied for this job through the state. This architect said he needed to hire me at the state of California, and I think he qualified for the position. So, you know, he bought the application, and Women in Alcoholics Anonymous, Patricia and Grady, and people helped me fill out the application, and I filled out the application and sent it off, and I got this letter. You know, you get those, when you're new and you get those official letters, you take them to your home group and they interpret them. Yeah, so I got this letter and I took it to my home group and they interpreted it, and it said, well, you're going to go take a test down there in downtown Sacramento for this position. So it was Patricia and Linnell, or, you know, this group of women that delivered me there, and they just said, you just go through that door. And I went through that door, and me and 700 men took a test. You know, and I didn't finish the test all the way, but I gave the best sober woman I was that day. And you know, there was a couple of questions I didn't get to finish. But you know what? I want you to know, if you're new, it felt good to just complete the process. So good to just complete the process. Face your fears. You know, my niece gave me a thing. It says, shoot for the moon and land in the stars, Auntie. If you're new, shoot for the moon and land in the stars. You know, I got a letter from the state that looked like they were going to hire me. And they did. I took it to my home group, and they interpreted, and they said, well, my God, they're giving you a job, and I said, by God. Then I come to find out I was in the top 10% of the people that took that test, and I was the first woman ever hired to do industrial inspections in the state of California. Oh, my God. Huh? That, you know, how do you get from here to there? How do you get from here to there if there's not a God in your life? You know, I'm your spiritual speaker, and if you can't figure out God's working in my life, you're not listening. That's all I got to say about that. You know, I was delivered down to Otay Mesa in San Diego, and I was on fire. You know how on fire I was to be brand new sober, and I got a big job. And they gave me this guy by the name of Al. Yeah, Al was an inspector for 28 years. He had on his khaki pants and his khaki shirt. And he wore his hard hat inside the car. He was a significant guy. Now, I'm about to tell you something, and Fran won't let me say the word, but I'm going to say some things that are racially inappropriate. Because, see, I want you to get, so please do not take offense, but you have to get the essence of Al. Because Al said, well, we knew those minorities were going to come. We just didn't know when they were going to arrive. So I'd been in the union long enough. I had no banana nut bread to give to him, but I looked at him and I said, well, one of the other minorities is going to get here. He looked at me and he said, wait. Don't take offense. We're waiting for the two Negroes, the Indian and the Sikh. Fran. I said, huh. I looked at him and I said, this is when I knew that the program, and if you're new, this is where you practice the principles of the program. Because what came out of this young girl that came to you as a junkyard dog was nothing short of the divine spirit talking to me, through me. I looked at him and said, you must have resistance in my being here. This is where you practice the principles of the program. But it's not okay that you talk to me like that ever, ever again. And it was yes, I got that from Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't think that that's God working in my life, then you're crazy, because there's a lot of things I wanted to say to old Al. The kind of things that Fran won't let me say from up here. Because you know what? I'm a woman with dignity and grace. That's right, baby. I'm a brand new woman here. Yeah. Who I am today is a miserable result of Alcoholics Anonymous and working those steps and practicing those principles and sponsoring people and going and getting people from places because I had a car. Wasn't registered, wasn't insured. You know how you know it's a spiritual experience when your driver's license, your car registration, the checks on your checking account all match. That's a spiritual experience. You know, I went home to Sacramento to speak at a little get together up there called the Spring Fling, and there was a job at UC Davis, and I thought, well, you know, I'm going to apply for that job. I applied for that job and got another interview and went there and I interviewed for this job, and there were six people that asked me all kinds of questions, and I just gave them the best sober woman I was that day. I got a call 6 weeks later and I got hired to be a project manager at UC Davis, and they gave me all the Grand Master keys to the university. Yeah, good. And I'd been there about 5 years, and this position for superintendent came up, and I'm like, well, shoot for the moon, land in the stars. So I applied for the job. I went to this conference room to interview with 20 people, and you could see the reflection of yourself in the table, right? And they asked me all kinds of really important things. And I looked at them in the eye and gave them the best sober woman I was that day, right? And at the end, they said, you know, Edie, if you're the successful candidate in this position, you're going to be working with academics and out in the community. Is there anything that you do in your community that you could tell us about that's outside of your work? I thought to myself, well, I do. But do I want to? And I thought in that moment, I said, if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't even be sitting at this table. So I said, I want to thank you for the time that you've given me. And yes, I want you to know, it's a wonderful experience to be here and have this opportunity. And I'm a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I take I carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous into institutions, into the jails, and I go to the Indian reservations and I do those things. And they want to know about the jails, about the jails. And I said, well, this is it. You know, we go into San Quentin and you sign a no hostage clause. That means if they decide to keep you, nobody's going to negotiate to get you back. You know, kind of like Louise told me, you know, you look down at a bacon and eggs and one was committed and one was involved. Think you had to die for the bacon, maybe. And you know, I've been around that kind of stuff. That, you know, I do what's put in front of me. I do the next right thing. And today I want you to know that I've gone over a little bit and I'm going to shut up right now. And I went to a conference, and there was an Indian man speaking, and he said, you know, when he was a little boy, he used to see the medicine man carry these rocks around, and he knew that these rocks were healing rocks and magical rocks. And so he walked up to the medicine man one day, and he said, you know, where do you get these rocks? And the medicine man put his arm around him, and he said, well, son, I'm just moving that mountain one rock at a time. And see, that's what we do. It says we're powerless over alcohol and our lives are unmanageable. So we get to move each other's rocks. He says, as young people, you go to a lot of different places, and you want to go to faraway places. When you're there, reach down and grab the soil and smell it and know where you are. Because he says, the longest journey you will ever take will be from your mind to your heart. Thank you for the privilege of taking that journey tonight.